Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher at a special broadcast from the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum annual spring plant sale on the OSU campus. We are here until noon. Go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides for directions and more information about the sale. If you have to, pull over, turn around, get over here. A regular at the sale every year is Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Kanapke. She's an author, a teacher, a lecturer, and blogger, and she joins us now to talk cocktail gardens, herbs, and more, and as always, to answer your questions. Welcome, Deborah Kanapke.
Happy to be here, and it is an absolutely gorgeous day today.
Perfect. Yeah, we hit the bullseye today on the weather. You can't miss it. It makes the plants all look beautiful, and they've been freshly spritzed for the day and are ready for you to gobble them up. If you have a question or comment today, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Again, Deborah Kanapke's here, and we want to talk about something we've never really talked about before,
no.
But we got the idea because you did an event for Chadwick, a fundraising event called
Grow, Muddle, and Stir.
Grow, Muddle, and Stir, and it's about how to use the fruits of your garden, fruits and the herbs and everything else in cocktails.
In cocktails and all kinds of drinks. Okay. I mean, you know, we talk about, people will say the word bushes, and it's like, oh, please use the word shrub. So shrub is not only something you can put in the garden, but it's something you can make. You can make a shrub drink with vinegar. And it's really tasty, and fruits, and it was a way to preserve.
You know, you lost me at vinegar.
Did I lose you at vinegar?
You lost me at vinegar.
Well, no, actually, I should have brought some with me. Mm-hmm. Darn, we could have had a tasting. But it's not a lot of vinegar, but it's a little bit of sharpness. You know, like the bitters give you a different kind of flavor profile.
Uh-huh.
So do the vinegar. So you can use apple cider vinegar. You can use wine, sherry vinegar. I used a balsamic vinegar with my cherry shrub. It was really good. And the taste is amazing. Now, you can use alcohol or not. Now, with alcohol, it's gin or rum or bourbon or take your pick, or vodka. And not with it, or not with alcohol, it's club soda, seltzer, tonic, whatever. So it's fun to experiment. And I've been playing with my shrubs.
How so?
Well, I've been trying them with and without alcohol. I've found that vodka doesn't interfere with the flavor, but I'm not a big vodka fan.
Well, it doesn't add a lot to it.
It doesn't add a lot. So rum is interesting. It was very good with the blueberry one. I didn't like it as much with the cherry one.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then you can also use brandy.
I think the brandy and cherry make probably a good
would
combination.
Be good.
Yeah.
Now the cherry and bourbon.
Cherry
just
and bourbon.
Just like your
bourbon
cherries.
Yeah.
Oh,
I canned some bourbon cherries this past year. Deb got a little taste
Man,
of
those are
babies.
Good. So it's just fun, and it's all about experimentation, thinking about what you like to drink and flavors that appeal to you, and then putting herbs in. Like there's a blueberry lavender shrub that's delicious.
Blueberry lavender shrub, I have never heard of such a thing. Now, you're not talking about a blueberry bush or shrub.
No, I'm talking about, I had to use frozen blueberries because I didn't have fresh. But there's this whole recipe, and I have this handout here so that I can tell you about it. But it was 1 pint of blueberries, lightly crushed, 1 cup of sugar, 1 cup of apple cider vinegar, except I use champagne vinegar, and 8 to 10 lavender sprigs. I didn't have those, so I fudged and used 2 tablespoons of lavender buds that I had from last year. And then you combine the blueberries with sugar in a bowl, and they go in the refrigerator overnight to macerate and release all their juices. And then I put the lavender in the vinegar, and it was in 1 day in a dark place. And then I poured it all together, into this strainer, and I mushed, I like that word, I mushed the blueberries through the strainer, and the vinegar poured through, and then I had to pour it through another time to kind of clear it out, and I poured it through a third time, and then I put it in a pint jar, and then it sits in the refrigerator for about a week, and then you add whatever else you want to put with it after that week. And it's quite tasty.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. It was good. The cherry was really, really good.
I still have about
sour cherry.
Gosh, I think 3 quarts of cherries frozen in my refrigerator, my freezer.
Maybe you should try a cherry. I'll send you. Actually, I think I did send you this.
Yeah,
it's
you
right
did.
There. The
yeah.
recipe's
well,
there.
I, you know. I'll get to it. I'll get to it. We are talking about cocktail gardens today. Of course, it's in the eye of the beholder. If you have a question or comment about gardening today, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are broadcasting today. It's a special broadcast from the 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale. For more information, go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And, you know, check it out. This is the plant sale is going on today and tomorrow, just in time for Mother's Day, FYI. So check it out and also come down and say hello to us. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, author, teacher, lecturer, blogger, and a plant and planting expert. We're talking about cocktail gardens today. Whatever cocktail, you know, you like, you can probably get something to add to it from your garden. But there is such a thing as a cocktail garden, right?
There is. And that's the one book I did not bring. I have a cocktail garden yeah. book.
And she's not exact. She's got a lot of books here, folks.
I have. Well, I only have five.
Oh, okay. Five. Okay. So,
there's a cocktail book by C.L. Fornari, and it's called The Cocktail Hour Garden. So she describes how you set the scene to have a cocktail party, and then she talks about the plants that you can grow if you want representatives like junipers for gin.
Mm.
So although you have to be careful because there are some junipers that are poisonous, so you have to make sure you use the right juniper, like the common juniper and the eastern juniper. Those are both okay, but some of the others, no.
Okay. Know your junipers.
Yeah. Yeah, and do not mix up your junipers with your taxus or your yews. They're totally different.
Okay.
But she talks about candles in the garden and then mixing all these things at the table and going into the garden and getting fresh mint to put into your mojito.
Uh-huh.
Oh, mojitos are so tasty.
There's nothing like a nice mint simple syrup either.
And
very easy to make and very worth it.
I also have simple syrups on that mm-hmm. I sent you, and I made a ginger simple syrup.
Ooh.
That
you
was
you can grow really this in good. Your garden.
You can, but it's an annual. So the not annual, it's a tender perennial because it does come back in warmer areas. But I used ginger that I had, frozen ginger. I grew it 1 year and I had so much of it I ground it up and froze it in little containers, and that's what I used for my ginger syrup, and it was delicious. And there are some people here who went to that Grow Muddle and Stir
uh-huh.
fundraiser, and the ginger syrup disappeared. It was gone.
Uh-huh.
There's a funny story from the fundraiser.
Good for a laugh. Go
yeah, on. I make my own vanilla, so I infuse a really good rum.
Wait, do you mean you make your own vanilla? You mean you take the vanilla seeds?
I take the vanilla beans. I buy the
vanilla
beans,
okay.
Which, by the way, are triple the price right now for two reasons. There's a fungus that's attacking the vanilla vine, and Madagascar had this huge storm that came and wiped out some of their vanilla plantations. So buying vanilla and buying vanilla beans right now is going to cost you money.
Okay.
So, but I fortunately bought my 6 ounces of vanilla beans for $60.
Wow.
Before that hit, because now it's
$180. Wow.
For wholesale.
So we know where to get our vanilla from.
No, now I've hidden them. They're in a safe. I infuse my vanilla beans in a good rum. And so I had that on the table because I said, here's another Grow, Muddle, and Stir. Now, I didn't grow these vanilla beans, and I didn't grow the sugar cane that made the rum, but sometimes you can't do all that. You have to outsource. So it was sitting there, and I didn't realize, but someone had decided they wanted to try it. And then they passed it all around the room, and when it came back, my 2 cups of rum, vanilla-infused rum, were gone. So obviously,
did you cry?
No, because I have more at home.
Okay,
I have lots more at home because I give them.
But
as
that's
gifts.
How much people
yeah,
enjoyed it.
People loved it, and it was one of those things like you said, you make your own vanilla.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's easy, but you have to get the pieces, parts together.
Right.
And then if I see a really cool bottle that someone has that they're going to throw away, I say, no, I'll take that bottle.
What do you think some things from the herb garden that people don't identify usually as a cocktail-ish plant?
Oh, gee, I've used everything. Rosemary, basil, thyme, fennel. Mm-hmm. Fennel gives you that anise flavor.
Right.
Borage blossoms give you cucumber.
Wait.
Borage. Borage is kind of...
See this, but I just gave her the perplexed look.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Borage is this very... like sort of sticky plant that has little blue flowers that are about 3/4 of an inch to an inch in diameter. Mm-hmm. And you just take the flower and it pops off the sepals. So it, all you have are the petals and it's blue and you float it in your infused water or you can make an infused simple syrup with a whole bunch of blossoms. And it has this fresh cucumber flavor. Mm. Or you float it in your cocktail, and it just gives that little bit of zing. And it's an edible flower, so at the very end, you eat that, and you get this little bit of wow. So that's borage. And it's not a pretty plant, and it's an annual, a true annual. It comes back every year from seed, mm-hmm. and I let it spread in a whole area that I have. So, yeah, so borage. Let's see, I said fennel. Dill. Dill is fun in a Bloody Mary.
Oh, in a Bloody Mary, right?
Oh,
right,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and so is the fennel.
Unless we forget,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, don't forget Bloody Marys. And let's see, I'm trying to think. I just go into my garden and I pick. I do use a lot of mint because mojitos are one of my most favorite things.
I'm going to have to remember that.
And you can do peach mojitos mm-hmm. and you can do pear mojitos and you can do, yeah.
We got to run a run now. We are broadcasting live today from the 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale. For more information, you can visit the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. But let me tell you, it's the easiest place to find. It is on Lane Avenue.
And Fred Taylor.
And Fred Taylor Drive, just off of 315. You can't miss it. It's huge. There's plenty of free parking across Lane Avenue south. A ton of free parking. No problem there. Just walk on over. They have wagons you can drag around, a pile up with all of your plants. There's every conceivable plant here, mm-hmm. every kind of plant, tropicals too, a little bit, but mostly outdoor, lots of beautiful arrangements for Mother's Day. There's all kinds of art. I guess crafts as mm-hmm. well here to
have some artisans.
Enjoy complimentary crafts. Lots of artisans here. So there's a million things to look at and see. And if you can join us for the program, we'd love to have you.
There's raspberries and blackberries, and you need those for your simple syrups.
Yep. Okay.
So we have raspberries
everything
and blackberries.
You need
everything
is right
here.
Okay.
Come and get it.
For
tomatoes,
a cocktail garden.
Peppers.
Yeah, it's all here. So, join us. If you can't join us in person, please give us a call if you have a question or comment. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is a special broadcast from the 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale. For more information, you can check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. We're talking cocktail gardens and more with Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Knapke. If you have a question or comment for Deborah, drop us a line or give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Email us at wosu.org/allsides. Sorry about that. You know, Deborah, what, for starters, for people just starting with an herb garden, what are the basics? What do they need to know?
You want soil that drains well mm-hmm. and that is in the sun for most of your herbs. There are some that like the shade or that can tolerate shade, like mint, which
mint
prefers
will
to
tolerate
be,
anything.
Yeah, but in the sun it turns into a crispy critter. So mint is better when it doesn't get west sun. But for the most part, you want, and I have this handy chart, so it tells you what herbs want. But you don't want soggy soils. And you want well-drained soils, which a lot of people will say, well, what does that mean? You know, we have clay soils.
Yeah.
So that means you're going to have to amend with compost because clay holds moisture at the roots and at the crowns of plants. And that's one of the causes of rot of our plants. So, in fact, that's what's happened to a couple of my lavenders over this winter. We had, by the way, lavender, great in cocktails. But the buds only, no leaves,
okay.
No leaves, just the buds. But we had such a wet winter. It was cold, then wet, and then the spring was cold and wet, and I lost a couple lavenders.
I didn't get any back this year,
oh,
as far
goodness.
As I can tell. But I have not had good luck with lavender. It's something I struggle with. Every year, though, I try. I make valiant efforts, but...
We need to build you a hill.
Okay.
And then put your lavender on top of that
yes,
hill.
Because when I've looked at lavender fields, they yeah. are all in mounds. That's
mm-hmm.
right. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay. Let's see. Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Oh, good. Hey, that Arboretum sale is fantastic. I went last year and got some purple tomatoes and tie-dye tomatoes, and they were great. Two comments, I guess. Don't forget mint for Mai Tais, which are amazing. And also, well, I guess three comments. Also, lime syrup combined with coconut rum makes a delicious coconut margarita, like almost like a key lime margarita. It's
mm-hmm.
really great if you infuse the simple syrup with a little bit of lime. And my question for Deb is, we can't seem to keep rosemary alive. We love rosemary. We like to try and infuse that, too. Any tips for keeping rosemary alive would be appreciated. Thanks.
Okay. Well, let me tell you how to keep rosemary alive. First of all, rosemary is not hardy here in Columbus, Ohio, most winters. Most rosemary will go to 10 degrees Fahrenheit and then die. And since we go below 10 degrees Fahrenheit, we have an issue. So what you can do is you can try to bring it in. However, rosemary must have good air circulation, and it must have good, well-drained soils. And when you bring it inside the house, it needs to be in the coolest room of your house. You need to pull back the water a bit. Don't let it go totally dry, but do not keep it wet. And if you can, you need to put a fan in that same room so that there's air circulation going past the plant. Otherwise, you will get black sooty mold. Rosemaries like being outside. They really don't like being inside. I am most successful when I grow them in my hobby greenhouse. When I bring them into the house, it's for a couple weeks around Christmas or for special occasions or a party. But if you keep them there for a long period of time, even I have problems. You know, and I'm supposedly the expert. But I kill plants too. So outside, I have had rosemary go over winter outside, but that's when we've had zone 7 winters, which we get periodically, and we had two in a row. But then last year we had a true zone 6A winter, and all my rosemaries died outside.
Yeah.
So I hope that helps. But yes, rosemary is excellent in cocktails. I can't think of, and also alliums. I should have mentioned.
Allium is from the onion family.
So your chive blossoms, float those in a martini instead of the pearl onion.
Or the olive.
And the olive.
And the olive. Okay.
Yeah, olive, chive blossoms, go for it.
It all looks good. Doug, I hope that helped. If anyone else has a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think are the best herbs to start with if you're just venturing?
If you're just venturing, the best herbs, of course, there's basil mm-hmm. and parsley.
Can be kind of tricky lately, though.
That downy mildew is a problem. In the past, basil mm-hmm. would have been my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
But parsley is a great gateway drug for for herbs. As mint, mint will spread, but its roots don't go far
into
the soil.
It's easy to pull out and control if you take the time to do
right.
it. Yeah.
Or put it in a pot, and it will overwinter. It's very tough. I do rosemary in pots, try them in the soil periodically. So I think rosemary is good because most people like it. I'm looking at my list here of, like, lemon balm.
Yeah.
In fact, you may hate me if you bring lemon balm into your garden because it self-seeds everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But it's nice.
But it's nice, and it's fantastic. I didn't mention lemon balm in for muddling in infused waters and simple
syrups. I was going to say a simple syrup.
Simple syrup and lemon verbena in simple syrup. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I just keep going back to this, don't I?
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about cocktail gardens, cocktail herb gardens. If you have a question or comment, and really any kind of gardening question, as you know, Deborah Kanapke can pretty much answer it or has a book that can. It's nearby, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I have, because of the winter we had, my time is coming back, but there's a lot of dead on it. Mm-hmm. How do I know how much of that to cut off and where to cut it off?
By this time of the season, you can pretty much tell that it is time to cut off the dead stuff. But you have to be careful because sometimes you'll get leaves at the very end.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you cut it off here where it looks dead, then there go your leaves. So it just depends. What I tend to do is look into the plant, see where I'm getting lower break of new leaves, and then cut down to that.
Okay.
Because all this other stuff just looks scruffy.
Right.
And then if I cut off any that has time, I'll either dry it or use it in the food that I make that day or a couple days later. Or it gets composted if I'm not thinking about it. So the times, some of them took a hit in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my upright times took a hit. They are more sensitive, again, to wet soils, just like lavender, rosemary, sage, and thyme. Those four plants are all subshrubs, and they hate wet feet in the winter.
What does subshrub mean?
Oh, oops. Okay. So we have shrubs. Yep, we have shrubs and we have herbaceous plants. And because plants don't read our books, there are some plants that like to be between those two categories that we've designated as categories. So we call them subshrubs. So if you look at lavender, you'll notice the base is woody, but all of the new growth is herbaceous and doesn't become woody until the end of the season.
Okay.
So it doesn't make real wood right away.
And that's a subshrub.
That's a subshrub. It's in between. It has a shrubby base and herbaceous top.
Mela, you're on the air. Hi, Mela.
Heidi, I was wondering, Debbie, have you forgotten how people always used to build strawberry hills and stuff like this?
Mm-hmm.
If you get the narrow cinder block, you can make a raised bed and you take the dirt out and then put it in a wheelbarrow or something. You stick the gravel down. And then you can make a stepped garden. And what I also tend to do is those indestructible plastic 2-liter bottles, if you put water in those, they give off heat.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, you can keep an awful lot of things going, even in slightly adverse conditions, especially if you've got it against, if you're in a ranch house, against a south wall. I had some Morton oranges that I left out until January, covered up with some very, very thin vinyl tarping as sort of a tenement. Essentially, you're making a cold frame.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even keep some of the things, such as rosemary, some of the French lavenders, my oranges, of course. Some of my orchids also got a little bit, oops, in there. But essentially creating a structure that you're going to permanently put that stuff, and then it also helps because some of the critters don't like climbing, so that you can reach it easily. It's a handicapper's dream. So you need to remember the fake cold frames as far as semi-tenders.
Well, that should help Doug out for how to try to keep his rosemary alive. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mela. That's Mela and Blacklick. Thanks a lot. Anyone else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The best times of year, I wanted to ask you about something and it just flew out of my mind. Rats. Happens to me too, people.
It never happens to me.
just hide it better than others most of the time. But so the idea of taking something fresh out of the garden, for one thing, some people don't know what muddling is.
Oh,
a good any bartender worth their salt does nowadays, but tell us about muddling.
There is actually a tool called a muddle.
Mm-hmm.
And the old-fashioned tool was, it's like a stick, and it has a slightly thicker bottom, and it's 8 to 10 to 15 inches long, depending on how tall your glass is that you're using. And it can, you put it in the glass and you muddle your herb or your fruit or your, you know, like your citrus slices, your lime, etc. You muddle that in the glass and then you put all your yummy rum,
whatever,
simple syrup, whatever in. So nowadays, though, muddles are also out of stainless steel and plastic, which I think is totally unromantic.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a wood muddler, and I know that maybe there might be some flavor contamination, but I've never had a real problem with that. But darn it, I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way.
That
no
may be
plastic.
The magic of it all is the flavor contamination.
Right.
You never know.
Right. Getting that little extra something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's muddle. So you grow it, you muddle it, and actually we muddle a lot of things when we cook and when we make cocktails.
Something we haven't brought up is cilantro.
Yeah.
Do you have something against cilantro?
No, I have nothing against cilantro. I use it in cooking all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mexican food and Indian food, love cilantro. I've just never used it in a cocktail.
I'm trying to think. Maybe
what would I use that in? Yeah, it'd have to be one of the savory cocktails.
Yeah, exactly.
It definitely wouldn't go with sweet.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, but I don't know. I'm going to think about that for a while. In the meantime, Dan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dan.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm interested to hear what either one or both of you say about row covers, or they're called fabric row covers, for protecting from insects, and also a heavier version to protect from the frost. And do you use them? What are pros and cons and that kind of thing?
I have a product called Rime. And it is a woven cloth that is very light. And when you open it up and there's any wind, it goes down out in the yard. But I've used it for trying to keep the vine borers out of my cucumbers and my melons. So to kind of... And also trap them, because they sometimes get trapped in it, and then I have the joy of squishing them. For frosts, I have used them at the beginning. I know.
That's gross.
Was that a little bloodthirsty?
Yeah.
Sorry. It's just that they were going to go after my cucumbers and my melons.
Yeah,
what do you expect?
It brings out the beast in Deborah.
But I use them at the beginning of the season, at the end of the season. If we have one of those surprise frosts from Mother Nature, I have pictures of Rime all over my backyard when I deigned to put my tomatoes in on May 1st, and then we got a frost on May 5th or 6th or whatever.
Was this last year?
This was a few years ago.
Okay.
And so I had Rime all over, and I got rocks from all over the garden, and that's how I kept my Rime down. And it was there, I think we went down to 27 degrees or something, some ridiculous. It was cold. So I have pictures of that Rime all over my yard, but I also use them in the fall to extend if I put in lettuce in August and September, lettuce, greens, other crops, the peas, and if we're going to get a real strong cold snap, I'll cover them with Rime. And the furthest I've had something covered was into the beginning of December, and then had my lettuces and kale in December. So yes, I do use them.
You just reminded me. I planted what I was hoping would be a late crop of lettuce yet last year, and nothing came up. I did the same thing with the spinach. It did come up,
mm-hmm.
and it stayed with me all through the winter,
mm-hmm.
and I still have lettuce from that made it through the winter with no protection.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, bully for that. The lettuce didn't ever came up, but it's coming up this spring. And my husband said, "Well, look how nice, neat row it's coming." I go, "It's because I planted it." A nice row. As well,
again,
is that typical?
It can happen.
Yeah.
Seeds are on their own timetable.
Yeah, they don't read our books.
No, they don't. And there is a There's a professor here at OSU, Dr. Pablo Jordan, and I will never forget him saying to me, seeds are life in the slow state and in the slow and dry state. And sometimes it takes multiple things to wake them up. Cold, temperature change, and moisture. So maybe there wasn't enough moisture when those seeds first went in and they decided, it's the wrong temperature, it's the wrong moisture, it's the wrong light, I'm not going to germinate.
But they don't rot either.
Sometimes they do. Yeah. Obviously yours did not.
Some of them didn't, yeah.
And they are cold hardy seeds because your lettuce can self-seed from the year before.
Oh, okay.
And then you will get new lettuces. I get it all the time.
Okay. I haven't before, but that might be just because I jump in and start, you know, moving the soil around. You are listening to a special broadcast from the 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum plant sale. We do this, I think this is the sixth or seventh year in a row that we've done this.
Yeah, I've lost count. Someone asked me and I said, five, six,
it's one of our traditions
seven?
Now. Mm-hmm. And it's for more information, you can visit the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. It's a beautiful day for a plant sale. It's going on today and tomorrow on the OSU campus at the corner of Fred Taylor Drive and Lane Avenue, right off 315. So if you're in your car, just turn it around and come on down and join us. It's all day today and all day tomorrow. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Deborah Kanapke, author, teacher, lecturer, blogger, and plant and planting expert, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. You're listening to a special broadcast from the grounds of the Ohio State University Chadwick Arboretum's annual spring plant sale. For more information about the sale, goes on today and tomorrow, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We're right here at the corner of Lane Avenue and Fred Taylor Drive on the OSU campus, just down the road from 315. We're talking cocktail gardens and more with Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. If you have a question or comment for Deborah, drop us a line, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you want to talk about this book, don't you? You're holding it up in front of me, and I have to ask you about it. Tell us about your new book.
Well, I have lots of new books, but yeah. Because when I did this Grow, Muddle, and Stir fundraiser, I thought, ooh, an excuse to buy books.
Yeah.
So I went to Half Price Books, and I went to a couple other stores. I went to Barnes & Noble, and I was just looking at all the things that are out there about the bar.
Yeah.
And I even have a book called The Bar,
A Spirited
Guide to Cocktail Alchemy.
Yes.
I know. Isn't that great?
But
this one is Zen and Tonic.
I love it.
Savory and fresh cocktails for the enlightened drinker.
What captured you about that book?
Well, first the title. And then here's this. They had the sparkling sage. Yeah,
since you're the garden sage. Yeah.
But it's lemon juice, honey syrup, a honey simple syrup, blackberries, sage leaves, and 4 ounces of sparkling wine.
Oh, my goodness.
And I read that and I said, that's my drink. So yeah. I'm going to do that this summer now that the sage leaves are coming up. But isn't that a beautiful picture?
For those
of you out there, you can't see
it. No, but it's in a nice, beautiful cocktail-y wine glass. It's beautiful color.
Island sunset. I mean, I just started flipping through this and I said liquid gold and then dragon kiss.
Yeah, right.
That's a slice of jalapeno.
A jalapeno.
2 ounces of tequila and 1 cup fresh cherry.
Is that the picture in the back of the book? I think it is. Go to the back.
That's it. That could be it. The dragon cocktail.
The dragon cocktail. There's a cocktail for everybody in this book.
There is. I don't often think of putting jalapeno peppers in my cocktails.
No,
but I suppose it would be good in a Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Once again,
the catch-all Bloody Mary.
It's the one savory
our fallback cocktail. Let's see. We're going to turn to Jennifer in Dublin. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for my call. I have a comment about catnip. I planted catnip in my backyard about 5 years ago, and I know this is obviously you don't want to put this in a cocktail, but I just kind of let it go, and it accidentally came to flower, and I didn't know that it would draw all of the honeybees and the goldfinches and the house finches, and it was gorgeous. I just was shocked, like, what was in my backyard, because I let catnip flower, and it does not take any work at all. It will, like, it will die in the winter and then come right back in the spring, and it will spread. It will take over, but it is absolutely beautiful and super easy to maintain. So if you are looking for something to plant that is easy, catnip is definitely one of those. Plus, my cats love it, so that's also good.
Is it in the sun?
It's actually in the sun and the shade, because I live in a condo and I have a tiny little backyard, and it does great back there.
Is it flowering in the shade?
Yes.
Or mostly in the sun? It is? Okay.
The whole area.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Catnip is Nepeta cataria. Is that a great name? Cat. It is a true annual. So what's coming back for Jennifer are the seedlings from the seeds of every year. So it spreads by seeds. It is a magnet for beneficial insects. It is also a magnet for the neighborhood cats.
Okay.
And I call cat nip kitty crack. And cat mint, which is the perennial, I call kitty marijuana. Or maybe it should be kitty cannabis, that it's
alliterative. Cats do act funny when they've ingested it.
They do. Well, most of the time, they get kind of a little high, and then they go to sleep.
Yeah, they get woozy-ish.
And we could use either of those in our cocktails. I would use that more in a hot tea, which is another way to use your herbs, and muddle those herbs in hot water. And so you get
a warm drink.
You get a warm drink. You know, we've been talking about cocktails, but there's all kinds of herbal tisane, another way of saying herb tea, but a whole bunch of herbal tisanes that we can drink from the garden. And that is also growing it, muddling it, stirring it, and drinking.
Jennifer, thanks for that idea. Mm-hmm. You know, I've grown catnip before. It did take over.
It will.
So I kind of moved away from it, but I have some places in my garden now that it might be good, and I do want to, like so many other people, attract those beneficial insects that Jennifer was talking about.
Bees.
So
great bees.
Yeah, exactly. Susan and Gahanna, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Ann. Glad to hear you.
Thank you.
I record all your shows on WOSU Ohio on TV.
Oh, you do? Thank you.
Yeah, I love him. It's fantastic. My husband always listens on the radio.
Well, you know, to see the show in the studio is a whole different experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can actually see when we hold up the book, and then there's this plant.
You can see
and
all of Deb's books. By the way, I think we had a picture. Yeah, our faces.
Uh-oh.
Well, I think somebody took a picture of all the books that Deborah has brought with her today, and we're going to post that on Facebook, on the All Sides Facebook page.
Oh,
so if you're wondering what all these books are.
Collection.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. But so Susan and Gahanna, tell us, do you have a question?
Well, this is probably something I already know the answer to, but I've got so many packets of seeds. And I'd prefer to put them directly in the ground because it's a lot of times hard to dig around tree roots and stuff. And right now I'm looking at, I would love to have my sweet pea flowers planted, and I don't think, I'm at 80 degrees, I think it's getting too hot. They're just seeds.
Yeah, I put my peas in 2 weeks ago and was afraid it was too late, but I couldn't get into the garden really before that. So
it's been a tough year for that kind of thing.
It has been because peas don't like it when it gets hot. So my peas are now only about 4 to 5 inches tall. So I don't know if I'll get them this year. You can still try, or you can wait until August 15th-ish, and put them in and try to get a fall crop, because I've found that when we have these late springs, we often get an extended fall.
Okay.
And to take advantage of that, you know, a packet of seeds for $2.69 or $3.29 or whatever, I figure it's always fun to experiment. So when I get something out of it that I didn't expect, it's like it's a bonus. So if you're afraid, not afraid, but concerned about putting them in now and them being just nothing coming up, try doing our fall crop idea. Or put in 10 seed peas and see what happens. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Susan, for that call. Do try it in the fall. It is, you're right. I mean, we have to start to make some adjustments, don't we, when the seasons are shifting like they are.
Yeah, and half the time it's a guessing game.
Right. Just take your chances.
Nature bats last.
We still have a few minutes left, so if you want to squeeze in a call, 614-292-8513. My guest is Deborah Konapke, and we are at the 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale at the OSU campus. For more information, check out the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. We've been talking about cocktail gardens, what's involved, and whether or not you use alcohol is sort of irrelevant, because talking about using plants and herbs and those kind of things. We've been talking about using jalapeno peppers. And here's the Wildcrafted cocktail book that Deborah has. So
Ellen,
this means foraging, right?
Yes. Ellen Zakos, who I've met, and she is, we're both members of the Garden Writers of America. And she wrote this book, The Wildcrafted Cocktail, Make Your Own Foraged Syrups, Bitters, Infusions, and Garnishes. And this one is called Hobbit Hollow. And this is
as
different.
In the Hobbit.
The Hobbit.
Tolkien Hobbit,
yes.
Right.
Okay. So 1 ounce mushroom-infused bourbon, 1 teaspoon acorn orgeat,
which is
a type of, I don't know if it's a bitter or, I think it's, you know, I've never made one, I have to admit. And then 1 teaspoon of verjuice, which is another juice that you make from something that you've foraged.
Uh-huh.
And 2 ounces of beer and a half of 1 well-beaten egg. And I dare any of you to eat that.
I'd make 2 so you can just well-beat 1 egg.
But anyways, it's a Hobbit Hollow. So these are all different...
Wow,
juices.
I know about that, though.
So this is very strange. And the reason I bought this is because if somebody wanted something really, really wild, now this is normal, okay. 1 ounce juniper syrup, 2 ounces lavender-infused gin, 2 ounces seltzer, and 1 lavender ice cube. So you can put your lavender buds in an ice
cube.
That's
a nice idea.
So I bought it for those kinds of things, and then I started flipping through, and then I thought, mushroom-infused bourbon.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know about that. but again, don't be afraid to experiment. This book shows you the sky's the limit. You can do just about anything, but then you have to drink it.
Let me ask you this. When you make my bourbon cherries, I don't use the best bourbon out there. I mean, when you're using an alcoholic beverage like that, you don't need to go with the best, do you?
No.
I mean, does it make much difference to you?
You probably don't need to, but I will tell you that I use Mount Gay Rum for my vanilla infused.
Which is, never heard of it?
It's the higher end.
Okay. No wonder I've never heard of it.
It's not the highest rum you can buy, but it is not, it is better than, I'm blanking totally on all the rum types, but Bacardi.
Rum Rico?
Yeah. It's better than Ron Rico. And Bacardi is good. It's like the next step up, and then there's the next step, and then there's Mount Gay, and then there's the really expensive stuff, which I don't buy that.
Okay. Well, she has some restraint. We, again, have a few more minutes. If anyone wants to squeeze in a call, 614-292-8513. What are some other liquids? Just water, juices?
I was going to mention... I mean, you can make shrubs and simple syrups and whatever, but I was also, sangrias.
Oh, of course.
Can we talk about sangrias
Absolutely.
Just for a moment?
Yes.
Now, everyone thinks about the typical red sangria, but I want to paint a picture.
Okay.
Take a nice Pinot Grigio, not expensive, but a nice one, and put in some papaya and mango and either lime or lemon. I think lime.
Uh-huh, lime.
Yeah, lime, mango, papaya, and Pinot Grigio. Mm-hmm. And let that sit in the refrigerator for 8 to 24 hours and then drink that in the
what
summer.
What would you garnish it with from the garden?
I would use mint. I would use basil. Mm,
mint and basil,
basil,
yes.
Or I would use a sprig of thyme.
What about oregano?
I don't know if I'd like oregano in there or not. But
it's too savory?
Yeah. Yeah, a little too savory. Yeah. Oregano, to me, is Bloody Mary.
We haven't mentioned oregano yet. I just wanted to throw out oregano in there.
Oregano I would use in something that it really is strong, because when you put oregano in something, that's sometimes all you taste.
Making a statement, right.
And I think it might cover up the Pinot Grigio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably go for the lighter.
Fruitier.
Mm-hmm. Although thyme, I think, would work. So, yeah, but that's a sangria. That's a white sangria. And then there's the rosé sangrias.
Mm-hmm.
So think about maybe putting an apple in and some rose petals.
And the thing with rose petals, though, is they don't have much aroma anymore.
No, so you have to, it's an old rose you have to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, an old
rose. I don't
rose.
Stop and smell the roses anymore. I stop and smell the lilac bush.
You can use lilacs.
Uh-huh.
They're
edible?
They are edible. I just read a whole thing on lilac blossoms. I didn't know they were edible.
Great.
So I tried one, and I thought it was almost too much of a flavor in my mouth.
Okay.
So it would be an infusion thing.
Yeah,
just a little bit too much. Let's see. What we were talking about before the lilac. The
sangria.
The sangria. Oh, shoot. It just went out of my head. But
white,
the rosé.
Rosé, right.
The rose petals. Some of the new roses are really fragrant. There's a white miniature rose called Irresistible.
Okay.
That is fantastic.
And it's aromatic.
It's aromatic. So you could take some of those and put them in.
Oh, we have a dad in the audience, I think, Jack and Annalise's dad, who is asking, what is the difference between culinary lavender and the other? How can I tell if I can use it?
Okay. That's a
good
great
question, Jack and Annalise's dad.
My granddaughter's name is, we say Annalise, but same, yeah. So there is the English lavender, Lavandula angustifolia, which is often sweeter, a sweeter taste. There's also the bigger, shrubbier ones that are called the hybrid lavenders or lavandins. They have more camphor in them, and you can smell that. And you really, they are sometimes used culinary-wise, but they're not my favorite. So I stick with Hidcote, Munstead. Look on the tag and look for English lavender, not the hybrid. I see that as the sweeter lavender, and that's what I use in my baked goods, because I also use lavender in my Mandelbrot, which some people might call biscotti. But
we have a caller, but we don't have time for it, but she wants to know how long a seed packet lasts, you know, how you should date those. We're pretty much out of time, but can you give us
real
quick,
quick
answer?
Seed life varies a lot. Tomato seeds, I get 5 to 7 years, but your germination goes way down. Some of your other seeds, like dill, a lot less. So you can get a book out of the library on seeds, and sometimes they will tell you the length. The thing is, just give it a try.
Deborah Kanapke, as always, it's been a joy. Thank you so much for joining us today for our annual visit to the Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale.
I want to be outside more.
I know. This is awesome.
this is great.
It's so beautiful. You've got to visit this place. It's a 2018 annual Chadwick Arboretum Plant Sale. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. This is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus. I want to say thanks to the All-Side staff, my assistant producer, Kyle McKinnon, who's sitting in and being the producer as well. He's doing a great job. All-Side's interns, Michael Lee, Alexander Havolchik, and Martin Coleman. With video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.